Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. CD's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll get to our sound check as we do every Monday following the football weekend. We'll get you the best audio from the college football weekend coming up. We'll react to the news of Lincoln Riley from over the weekend, from yesterday really, what it means for the rest of college football, the domino effect, and a whole lot more to get to throughout the afternoon. Of course, the big story in these parts, Clemson's shutout victory Saturday against South Carolina. First shutout of the Gamecocks in this rivalry since the 80s, and Clemson has now won seven in a row. Joining us now, former Clemson running back and somebody who's part of the radio broadcast and was there Saturday, Reggie Merriweather's with us. Reggie, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, man. Thanks for having me on again, and what a beautiful Monday it is. You know, talk about all the Clemson fans being so excited about the win from this past week. I don't think anybody in the state of South Carolina or Clemson or South Carolina throughout the world thought this game would have ended up like it was with Clemson posting the shutout. But, man, what an amazing game for the Clemson Tigers.
Yeah, it sure was. Now, you were there on the sidelines, right? Crazy environment to begin the game, and then as you see the home team start to fall further and further behind, lose by 30. What was it like as the game unfolded? What was it like being there in that stadium as Clemson eventually went on the way to the 30-0 victory?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, there's nothing really like playing in Williams-Brice. You know, you think about a rivalry like it's been in the last few years. Obviously, the two teams, not quite the same season that they've had in past years. Fans showed up. Obviously, the student section was there early with their towels and all that. And then you think about 6 or 7 minutes into the first quarter, and then there you could hear a pin drop in that stadium, which is very weird going to Williams-Brice and the fans not being in it, even though it was a sellout crowd. But I think the first touchdown by Shipley and how easy it was for the Clemson offense to just run down the field that first quarter, I just think it took the air out of the stadium. And then on top of that, too, you know, you think about the stats for, you know, both quarterbacks in this game. Neither one threw for over 100 yards, and it was basically a ground battle for both teams. And Clemson was able to come out victorious, having over 200 yards rushing. And, you know, the young running backs just looked really good. Also, Clemson offensive line looked really good, and Clemson was able to dominate in the trenches in both sides of the football on defense and on offense. So, you know, you think about what Carolina has been able to do these last couple weeks. I think they won three out of their last five, and Clemson's won their last five games. And it's like, man, this is going to be a really good matchup. And, you know, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And I think Clemson just came out and was on fire and was very prepared for this game. And, you know, hats off to Tony Elliott and his game planning, and Brent Venables as well, too. Man, he had the front four playing on fire this game with the stunts and the moves that they were making, and they were able to get off blocks and make tackles. And like I said, they just looked really good in the trenches on both sides of the football, Clemson did, and they dominated.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, on offense, 265 rushing yards. You played the position. You were a running back. What is it like to not only beat a team, but to beat them in that manner in which, you know, you're more physical, you control the trenches, you run it down their throat, and you do that in a rivalry game? What's that like to beat a team and beat them almost by just, you know, blunt force like that throughout 60 minutes?
Well, I'll tell you one funny thing. So these guys do a really good job, the coaching staff does and the training staff, strength-wise anyway, about teaching speed kills, but strength punishes. And that's one of the things that you want to lean on your opponent as much as possible in the run game, because not only does it help you on the road as an opponent in a hostile environment to quiet the crowd, but it also, too, kills that clock. And when you can start to lean on those guys and have some success up front, man, that just breathes life into your offense. And like I said, again, hats off to Tony Elliott, finding creative ways of running the football. And basically, they had two tight end sets at times. They had four wide receivers sometimes, and they were able to run the RPO to the highest efficiency. And, man, to do that to a great defensive front like Carolina has, which obviously they've got a couple of D tackles that are going to be really good. They've got the linebacker group that was fairly well in the SEC this year. But to do that on a struggling run offense that Clemson has struggled with all season was just phenomenal. And I don't think anybody thought that South Carolina wouldn't be able to muster up some type of offense. But hats off to Venables and what they've been able to do. And the front four just dominated in the trenches. And, that was a heck of a ball game for the Clemson Tigers.
Talking with former Clemson running back Reggie Merriweather, who was there on the sidelines for the game Saturday. You mentioned the winning streak for Clemson to end the year. You know, they started 2-2, surprised a lot of people with how they looked or how they didn't look early in the year. But the five straight wins, they blow out Wake Forest, they blow out South Carolina. They start to look a little bit like that Clemson team we were anticipating all year these last couple of weeks. What has stood out to you about the way Clemson has finished at least the regular season in getting these five wins to end the year?
Well, I think Clemson, to me, I'm a little biased, but Clemson, to me, is probably the best three-loss team in the nation, considering that they don't give up an offensive touchdown to the Georgia Bulldogs, which obviously they're number one in the country right now. They found their niche on offense, and they're continuing to win and win big, headed to the SEC championship. But, you go on the road, neutral side, lose by 7 to the number one team in the country. You go on the road and lose in a double overtime game to NC State, and then you go on the road again and lose a game to Pitt, which obviously they're playing in the ACC title game. So this Clemson team, even though they started off slow, has found their niche over the last few weeks, and they've been able to become creative on offense, right, find creative ways of running the football. I think DJ settled down in the pocket, and they just found their niche on offense. To be able to put up points. You look at these last couple weeks, they started off scoring 20 points, and I think in that was that Pitt game, they had 17 or 20 in that game. Then every week after that, they found a way to put up 20-plus points here, 40 again at Wake Forest, and then 30 this week on the road in a hostile environment in South Carolina. So, offensive line play has stood out. That's one of our weaknesses that we've had to just kind of shuffle people around all season and get better at. So that's been handled. And then obviously creating turnovers on defense, running the football effectively and finding creative ways of winning the football. And, you always talk about peaking, right? This team peaked at the right moment, and they are playing their best ball in the end of November, and hopefully that carries over into the bowl game this December, wherever they get picked up to go.
Let me ask you about South Carolina, because you were there in person to see that game up close Saturday. You've played on offense, of course, going back to your days running the football for Clemson. For South Carolina, offensively, they really struggled Saturday. A lot of that is going up against a good defense. But as South Carolina wraps up year one of Shane Beamer, what did you see from them on offense that, they need to improve upon to try to take that next step moving forward now under Shane Beamer?
I mean, this offense has showed up in some big games. You think about going and playing Auburn a couple weeks ago, and this offense, they found a way to run the football effectively on the ground against a great defensive front. They were able to throw the ball as well. They had some big-time plays. They had a couple plays over 30 yards. Obviously, too, playing Florida, even though Florida, just kind of fell apart after they played Georgia. But, I mean, it's still a good football team, and they had got a lot of five-star guys on that team as well. But they found a way to throw the football and run the football as well, too, effectively. So, again, I know they're probably getting rid of their offensive coordinator, but, they got a lot of good things to hang their hats on this season. It's hard to win in the SEC. Especially hard to win in the SEC East when you have so many competitive teams now, Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida, Georgia. And, there's no need for those guys to hang their heads. Again, you are playing against the tenured Clemson coaching staff that's been together for over 10 seasons now. So you've got chemistry there. You've got a lot of guys that have been on this team. I think we had a couple super seniors there. So, again, young football staff there in Williams, Bryce, and Beamer. You've got a lot of young guys on that team as well. So nothing to hang their heads on. But, you know, I believe next year they'll continue to get better. It takes a long time to build a program, much less a championship-winning program like Clemson has. But I think they've got the good coach there to make the magic happen. And, you know, again, you know, you get down there in the red zone, you think about, okay, do we want to kick a field goal and make this a, you know, it's still going to be a blowout, but at least we save face with 3 points, or we're going to go and try to score a touchdown at the end. And I think that says a lot about the way Shane Beamer wants to run this program and how it's going, for him to go for that touchdown at the end to make something happen. And, you know, unfortunately they didn't get it, but at the same time too, man, for me, as a Clemson fan, much respect to that program and the way the coaches handled that at the end to go down and score instead of kicking a field goal like Muschamp may would have done in past years. So they're moving in the right direction, and hats off to Beamer and that program, and wishing them the best of luck in their bowl game wherever they go in December.
We'll let you get out of here on this one. Talk with Reggie Merriweather, former Clemson running back. When you were there, you won in this rivalry your first, what, 3 years, and that was during a stretch in which Clemson won, I think it was 8 of 9 against South Carolina. Now in present day, with the win Saturday, that's 7 straight victories by an average of 26 points per victory. What does that mean, or what is that like for a program in a rivalry like this to be able to have such a dominance like that through a period of time? What does that mean? What is that like for Clemson to be able to go on this run here in this rivalry with South Carolina?
Well, I think for fans, it means a lot for the fans. But on a national stage of things, again, you talk about this Clemson program under Dabo Sweeney, you know, best is the standard. You know, not only is that a goal to win, you know, 10, 12 games a season and beat your in-state rival and go to the ACC championship, but this is things that this coaching staff has come to and expect. So not only when they recruit on the road, they have that in mind. Not only when they go to their workouts, their morning meetings, that has become the culture now to be able to knock out all those goals every single season and to go to the CFP. You think about it, this Clemson team, this is the first year that they haven't been a part of the CFP in the last 5 or 6 years. So that's amazing. And then, like I said, this coaching staff has been together for a very long time. And the expectations are high, will continue to be high. And I think, you know, with the Carolina program, where it's going, switching head coaches, I think they're trending in the right direction. But, again, young coaching staff, they have a lot of pieces of the puzzle they still need to put together. But I think they've got it going in the right direction. And then, you know, we've got some naysayers on our side of the ball as well, talking about Tony Elliott, how things are going at the beginning of the season. But, again, man, this team has battled back from injury bug after all kind of stuff that's been going on off the field, two issues. But they've battled back, and they still have a chance to win 10 games this season, go 10-3, and still complete some of their goals, you know, even though they're not in the CFP. But, again, man, just a great ball club this year. Great season they're capping off, and what a way to do it in Williams-Brice in 30-0 fashion. And, like I said, they'll continue to get better. Hopefully we don't lose any coaches this season from all the openings, but only time will tell. But, again, you know, the programs are so far apart right now, but I think Carolina's trending in the right direction with Shane Beamer and that hire. And then, you like I said, Dabo, man, but this guy's in his tenure, they've been together so long, just continuing to grow and grow and expect big-time things from this program.
He's Reggie Merriweather, played running back for Clemson, now part of the radio broadcast. Do you have a wish list for the bowl game? Do you have a certain area you hope that they send you for the bowl game next month?
I tell you what, as long as it's somewhere nice and tropical, I could care less. But, you know, I expect, you know, either be in Tampa or San Diego or somewhere like that. But, you know, this is going to be a good time for Clemson fans to kind of get out and visit somewhere else besides the big-time bowl game. So, you know, it's going to be one that's going to save your wallet and be able to take the whole family too. So it's going to be a good one, wherever we go.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's true. He's Reggie Merriweather. He'll be on the sidelines for that bowl game. Played running back for Clemson. He was there Saturday. Reggie, appreciate the time, and we'll catch up with you, I'm sure, down the road.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you again, and go Tigers.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Reggie Merriweather, former running back for Clemson, was on the sidelines as part of the radio call Saturday. Speaking of which, when we come back, we do it every Monday. Call it our sound check. We get you the best sounds from around the college football world over the weekend, and we'll do it when we come back. Appreciate the time from Reggie. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Coming up, our sound check as we get to the best sounds from the football weekend. And we'll do that coming up here in just a moment on the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time last segment from Reggie Merriweather, who joined us to talk about Clemson, South Carolina. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Now, I know songs today for the Hanukkah holiday that began yesterday. What's the connection here?
David Lee Roth. Okay, if you listen to the Hanukkah song, who's the first name mentioned?
Oh, really?
Mention?
You mentioned name? Oh,
David Lee Roth.
Okay.
That
I
was
listen to that song more often.
Yeah, it's good. And in fact, it could have worked for Thanksgiving as well, since it was from the album Eat 'Em and Smile.
Ah. On the text line, somebody asked, where is Spencer Rattler going to transfer to? Now, my response, because this came in last hour, I would have responded, he doesn't need to transfer anywhere because Lincoln Riley's leaving. I would wait to see who the new head coach is, and maybe you would prefer to stay at Oklahoma because I would imagine Caleb Williams is going to transfer to USC with Lincoln Riley. So then, if you're Spencer Rattler, right, that leaves you back in a starting role, having to win over a new coach. But with that said, then we just got the announcement here this hour, within the last 15 minutes, that Spencer Rattler has entered the transfer portal. So for Oklahoma, you lose your head coach, probably going to lose both quarterbacks. Five top recruits decommitted from Oklahoma yesterday, as you would imagine, whenever there's a coaching change. So they're going to have to pick up the pieces a little bit. Where will Rattler go? Good question. I don't know. I'll be honest, I haven't been all that impressed with him in terms of being a top-tier quarterback. Remember, he was supposed to be the number one pick. All right, people are talking about him as the number one pick. Now, he lost his job. I mean, is he even good enough to be an NFL quarterback? So, you know, if you're somewhere like, if you like him, if you like the quarterback enough, like even a Clemson could be interested because I don't know if DJ's the answer. Now, I don't know if Spencer Rattler is, but I also made the case for somebody like Miles Brennan. I don't know if I'd want to go first-time starting quarterback back-to-back years if you go away from DJ next year if you're Clemson. Maybe you want to get some sort of experience in there. Spencer Rattler is a two-year starter. I don't know if he's your answer. But if you're Clemson, after what you went through this year at the quarterback position, maybe you'd want a little bit more of like a sure thing, somebody who has some game film that matches what you want to do, someone who has some of that experience. And if you think that's Rattler, right, maybe he's your guy. I don't know. I mean, I think he still has plenty of ability, but he playing for Lincoln Riley, we've seen the success other quarterbacks have had. You know, he hasn't been all that great the last 2 years. But, yes, he is entering the transfer portal. I'm a little surprised. I thought maybe he'd at least wait to see what happens at Oklahoma next because I imagine Caleb Williams is gone. Lincoln Riley's gone, so you could still stay there. But he's choosing not to. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Reggie Merriweather. During the conversation, you may have heard, you know, like when you press the numbers on the phone while you're on the phone, like you're trying to dial with Reggie. And this is nothing to do with Reggie. I always appreciate having him come on, and he's great to talk Clemson football. But it reminded me of one of my favorite clips when Mike Francesa, who is a radio legend, We don't need to get into the weeds, but the first ever sports talk show. I mean, they made a 30 for 30 about it on ESPN. Maybe you saw it, but it was Mike and the Mad Dog on WFAN, the first 24-hour sports radio station in 1987. And so because of them, that's why I'm able to do this today. So Francesa's a real legend, but he's also someone that kind of hung on a little too long. But this clip was from a couple of years ago. He calls into a weekend show on WFAN hosted by Evan Roberts, driving around talking about the Yankees. And you want to talk about hitting the numbers on the phone when you're talking to somebody on the phone and it's either their cheek. I don't know how it happens nowadays, because usually you're on an iPhone and it's one of those, it's on the screen. You have to touch the buttons. Your cheek normally can't just do that. And also when you're on the phone, usually the screen goes dark, and just holding it up to your face, you're not going to touch the buttons either. So I don't know what exactly happens when these people, you talk to somebody on the phone and you still hear them accidentally dialing numbers while they're on the phone with you. This is the all-time record. It happened 55 times in about 90 seconds. Here was Francesa, this clip from a couple years ago, when he just happened to call into WFAN on a weekend to talk Yankees baseball.
How about this special guest? Mike. Mike Francesa, what's up?
Hey, I was just driving along listening to this, so I had to pop in. First thing for the fans. Number one, if you think any is made as far as rotation decisions or lineup decisions without it being from the top or the bottom of the organization, from the general manager right through the entire organization, it happens now everywhere. No manager makes that by himself anymore, those decisions. Nobody is doing that in baseball. That has changed radically in baseball. Every general manager is involved, probably more so than they should, okay? The whole motivation of the Yankees is to get to the bullpen. That's all they think about, getting to the bullpen. So as soon as CC gets past the fifth inning, and he almost got pulled, he was one batter from being removed in the third. If Ramirez had gotten a hit in the third, he would have been out of the game in the third inning. In the second inning, he would have been out of the game. The Chapman thing is going to be a very big problem inside that team, what he did. He should be quiet. He hasn't even done a job this year.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, that's the kind of thing that it pisses apart. That move is the kind of move that will hurt him his whole career. I mean, that's one that you talk about forever. I mean, just Chase pitch in 1960. One of them whole career. I mean, certain things that happen that you can't overcome, that's one of them right there that will haunt him. Because the Yankees had a chance to win the series if they'd gotten back one. That was the...
So what are you doing on a Saturday driving around? You hanging out with
the
kids?
I had to take my daughter to golf lessons. I have to go to wedding, so I was going to pick her up.
All right, Mike. Good talking to you, my friend. The phone is acting very, very crazy, I must say. That's Mike Francesa, who was kind enough to call in. What is up with that phone?
Still makes me laugh. I don't think it was the phone. I don't know how this still happens nowadays when people are usually, I would imagine, using smartphones. I don't know how you can press the button accidentally to dial a number, in this case, 55 times. And when you're on the phone, don't you hear that too on your end, or no? Or is it only the other person? Because if you hear that constantly happening, don't you realize, like, oh, I keep touching the numbers on the phone? I don't know how that happened. That's a 1990s problem, 1980s. Back when you used to have to actually push the buttons in, and sometimes, your cheek would rub up against one of those buttons, rub up against the six, and it'd make a noise when you're on the phone. Brutal. Anyways, appreciate the time last segment from Reggie Merriweather. Wasn't quite like that, and always appreciate the insight from him. Every week we get to our sound check. We bring you some of the best sounds from college football over the weekend. Let's get to some of these calls now from Saturday. Obviously, when you have these big rivalry games, you have some big dramatic moments, you have some great calls. Let's start with Michigan getting the rare victory against Ohio State. Here's how the fourth down stop sounded on Michigan radio to secure the rare victory for Michigan on Saturday.
This is the football game right here. Fourth down and long. Back to throw. Ojabo gets back there, forces Stroud out. Throw the ball down. That's caught, but it's short of the first down. That's it. It's caught. Vincent Gray covering. It's caught by Olave, but it's 5 yards short of the first down. That'll do it. Under a minute to play. Ladies and gentlemen, Wolverine Nation, the long drought is over. Ohio State is vanquished. The Wolverines are going to win this one. 42-27 is the score, and the Wolverines are going to go to Indianapolis.
Don't really know what happened on the play, but you do know it secured the win for Michigan, and I love the emotion there from their classic broadcasters. Who I think they're both maybe retiring at the end of this year. Maybe I'm making that up. Or maybe one of them. Dan Dierdorf's the color analyst. And it's, Jim Brandsetter is the play-by-play guy. He's been at it for a long time. But a big-time win for Michigan, of course, Saturday, holding on to beat Ohio State for the victory. As I said earlier, Harbaugh's the biggest winner of the weekend, and then I just loved his line afterwards. You know, this is what I love about rivalries. Last week, they asked both coaches to say something good or nice about the other team, and Harbaugh said something about the stadium, like, oh, they have a great stadium. And Ryan Day said, nope, not going to do it. That's what I love about a rivalry. And then Harbaugh gets up there at the podium after the game and says, you know, sometimes guys are born on third base and think they hit a triple. Talking about Ryan Day. I love it. Now, you're still, what, 1-5? So you can't talk too much smack. But at least for the next 12 months, you're coming off the most recent victory if you're Harbaugh in Michigan. And that was a big-time win for them. They had that early interception. And if you were watching the game, maybe you were thinking like me, oh, here we go. All right, Michigan, this is what normally happens in these games. They hang in there, and then they make a dumb play or two, and the wheels start to come off. But no, they kept coming back and get a big-time win against Ohio State. Elsewhere in the rivalry games, Joe, you can plug your ears because this was Oklahoma State getting the fourth down stop against Oklahoma.
I watched the game. Well, I've already been through the pain.
Doesn't mean you want to relive it, but you're going to be forced to here. Here's how it sounded on Oklahoma State radio as they got the stop on fourth down to secure the victory for Oklahoma State Saturday against Oklahoma.
Fourth and 10, Oklahoma from the Cowboy 24, 14 seconds left. 37-33, Oklahoma State. The game is on the line right now. Pair of receivers to each side. One back set. Williams claps his hands, gets the ball. Back to pass, under pressure. Pocket collapses. He is sacked! He is sacked! Back at the 33-yard line! They got him! It was the youngster, the freshman, Colin Oliver, that got him! Where's that Sooner magic now, baby? Where's that Sooner magic now?
The play-by-play was excellent of the play transpiring, and then they just disappear for a little while. The color analyst never says anything, and then he takes that jab at Oklahoma. I could only imagine the broadcasters just standing there smiling, soaking it all in when we hear that silence, right? They get the big sack. Usually in that case, that's when you want to relay what it means. The fact that you're going to win that game, the fact that you're going to the Big 12 championship, the fact that your playoff hopes are alive, whatever it is. Instead, I think they're just standing there smiling, enjoying the moment, and then he even takes that jab. You know, where's that Sooner magic now? Is the first thing he says after the play is over instead of relaying how big of a play it was. That was just a moment for Oklahoma State. I think they really enjoyed how they won that game and the fact that they did beat Oklahoma on Saturday. And obviously, a big win for them. Just like Ohio State, Michigan, I mean, that was a playoff game on Saturday, and Oklahoma State gets the big win. Elsewhere in these rivalries, we go to the Iron Bowl. Four overtimes. Alabama going for the win in a two-point conversion shootout. Here's how it sounded on Alabama radio.
Now for the two-point conversion to win it for Alabama. Bryce in the shotgun. Gets the snap. Backpedals. Looks left. Throws. Touchdown. Two-point conversion. And Alabama wins. John Metchie on the grab. John Metchie on the grab. And Alabama has come from nowhere to defeat the Auburn Tigers in multiple overtimes. Four overtimes. And John Metchie is the hero with help from many others. 24-22. The Crimson Tide wins the Iron Bowl of 2021.
Eli Gold on the call there. He's a legend. Now, Joe, you said in my ears quadruple too big of a word. I would avoid that word in the broadcast. But I think it's just these silly overtime rules. He first called it a touchdown when he made the catch, when technically it's a two-point conversion, but it's the first play. The offense just came back out on the field, right? So it almost is like a touchdown. Usually the two-point, it's the point after touchdown. You have to have a touchdown first. So he first called it a touchdown, then corrected himself, and then I think he was trying to figure out, okay, how many overtimes does this make? Because they're not really like overtimes when you're just going for two. And so he said multiple overtimes, and then he finally located either in the stadium or somebody told him or it dawned on him, oh, this was the fourth overtime. Which shows how dumb these rules are. When Eli Gold is confused of whether it's a touchdown or a two-point conversion, and what overtime are we in? I hate these new overtime rules. I think it's a lousy way to decide the Iron Bowl. But boy, did Alabama need to find a way to win that game to keep their season or playoff hopes alive. And eventually, it wasn't pretty, but they did find a way to get it done. All right, this next call is LSU. LSU against Texas A&M. I like that Ed Ogeron could go out with a happy send-off. Here is the game-winning touchdown for LSU in the final minute to beat 15th-ranked Texas A&M in Ed O's final game as head coach of LSU.
bringing up the backers near the line. Here's the snap to Johnson. Here comes the blitz. Throws it one-on-one, looking downfield. Caught! Jerre Jenkins at the six! Into the end zone! Touchdown! Fighting Tigers! He took the right pylon with him. With 20 seconds remaining in the game, A&M brought the house. Jenkins caught it around the six, rambles in. Jalen Jones was on coverage, but a perfect throw by Max Johnson on the run.
LSU getting the big win against Texas A&M and a nice send-off for Ed O. As I mentioned earlier, he was one of my winners of the weekend. To be able to win his final two games, and also, by the way, now 20 ranked victories, or 20 wins against ranked teams at LSU, second most in program history, plus the national championship. Was he the best coach? No. Did he do the best job over the last 2 years? No. Were there all sorts of things away from the football field? Yeah, apparently. But he did do a lot of good things, obviously, most notably, winning a national championship in his time at LSU. And I just like that he had that nice moment to finish off his tenure there, getting a nice win against a ranked Texas A&M team Saturday. Michigan State beat Penn State. James Franklin getting swept by the three most important teams on his schedule once again this year. He lost to Ohio State, he lost to Michigan, and they lost to Michigan State on Saturday despite being a favorite. Here was the game-sealing touchdown for Michigan State to make it a two-possession game late in the game. This was, if I remember correctly, like a 4th and 15. They throw it to the end zone, and they get the game-sealing touchdown in the snow to beat Penn State. Here's how it sounded on Michigan State radio.
Motion left. Snap back to Peyton. Here's the throw. Inside the 5. Inside the end zone.
He got it!
Leaping grab made by Jaden Reed. Touchdown, MSU! Great throw and a heck of a catch.
I have never had to broadcast a football game in the snow. I've had to do it in rain before, where all the press boxes now at football stadiums, the windows don't open. So I've had to do games when it's raining and it's humid and it's muggy and the windows fog up and you can't see out the windows. I guess that's similar to trying to do it in snow, where if you watch this game, like, the snow is really coming down. You can't see the yard lines. It's probably hard from their vantage point to even see the players. That's why I love that call where the play-by-play guy is kind of leaving like a little buffer zone inside the 5, inside the end zone. And then the color guy just jumps all over him saying he caught it because he probably saw it first. And, by the way, Penn State's wearing all white uniforms in the snow where the field is covered in snow, so that looks white. The snow's coming down. I mean, they were camouflaged. If you were watching the game on TV, it was hard on TV just to see the Penn State players. Obviously, it's not as big of an issue when you're down on the field, but when you're broadcasting from that bird's eye view, I've never had to do a game in the snow. I can only imagine what that's like. But Michigan State got a big win. One of my picks on the show Friday was Penn State. I was wrong. We had a losing week, by the way, in the picks, 4-6 overall, so it wasn't great. But that was one of them I got wrong. And as I mentioned earlier, for James Franklin, got swept by those three teams. It's now happened 4 of 8 years when you've gotten swept. You haven't even won a single one of those three. It's not good enough, even though he just got that big-time contract at Penn State. Last couple of ones. BYU-USC. USC has the football, trying to go for a winning score in the final minute. They have a fourth down. BYU got the stop to get the win. Here's how it sounded on BYU radio.
The Cougars show 3 down linemen. They drop 8. Dart throws on the slant. It is complete, but short of the first down by a full yard. The Cougars will take over on downs at the 10-yard line. BYU 35, USC 31 on 4th and 6, a gain of 5, and no argument about the spot. The referee signals first down, BYU, with 38 seconds to go, and that will do it.
Big win for BYU, ranked number 13 in the country entering that game. They get the win against USC. I know USC is not the same this year, but for BYU to hold on the road, USC still means something. If you were watching the game, when BYU got that stop on fourth down, one of their defensive players was doing like a little bit of the Dikembe Mutombo finger wag. Another one was kind of doing like the Hulk Hogan, where you circle your hand up to your ear towards the crowd. It still means something, even in a down year, to go there and beat USC. That's the brand power that they have, that even when they're a lousy team, you know, it's still a big deal. You still feel good about beating them. And for USC, their worst record this year since 1991. It's been 30 years since they've lost this many games, and that was when Rob Johnson was their freshman quarterback and Johnny Morton was their leading receiver as a sophomore back in 91. But now you have Lincoln Riley coming to try to save the day. And with all the talent already in California and the transfers and the recruits that are going to switch from Oklahoma to USC, it could be a quick turnaround for Lincoln Riley. So for teams like BYU, maybe enjoy it now. Enjoy it this year while USC was down, finishing 4-8. You beat them in their building on Saturday. You're taunting them afterwards because they just got a real big fish. And Lincoln Riley will see if he can turn things around there quickly. More thoughts on that coming up in just a little bit. And the last piece of audio, we head to the MAC because who doesn't love MACtion? Miami, Ohio against Kent State. The game goes to overtime on Saturday. Kent State gets the touchdown. They kick the extra point. Miami, Ohio then gets the football. They score the touchdown. They go for two and the win in overtime. Here's how it sounded on Kent State radio.
For the game. Gabbert takes it. He looks, throws, and it's not. Yeah! Kent State knocks it away, and the Flashes win the East. Montre Miller knocked it away, and the Flashes are going to Ford Field. Chuck Martin gambled and went for it. They went for two, and Montre Miller with the play of the year knocks it down, and they're going bananas at Dick Stadium.
Going bananas. Love the emotion. For Kent State, they have not won their conference since 1972. They'll try to do that this week in Detroit. They haven't even played in the conference championship since 2012. They'll be doing that this weekend because of that win on Saturday. So big-time stop for Kent State, big-time victory. We'll see if they can finish off winning the MAC with some MACtion this weekend. And that's your sound check as we get to the best sounds in college football. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Super Dave is with us. Let's go to the phones. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
I didn't feel so super after Saturday's loss. I mean, come on, Shane. You had home field advantage. You just got over a win with Auburn and Florida. And then you want to just lay down and die in front of Clemson. It had to be the big kahuna curse. It had to be the curse that did us in. I mean, 0 points, come on. I mean, God, not even a field goal whimper. And it was a great weekend. Otherwise, I picked all my deal. Remember on your show, the ones I said would win, won their games. Correct?
Yeah. Unbelievable.
So there you go. Huh?
Yeah, I thought South Carolina was going to win. That's what I heard from Super Dave himself. And they get shut out.
Yeah. Shut out.
Unbelievable.
I mean, yeah, Shane Beamer, Dave, and made big deal about all this stuff. And I mean, at least we're bowl eligible. Now, when you're bowl, at least you salvage something. Even with toilet bowl would be great. But, you know, the Tidy Bowl, man, I hope it's got a pretty good team against us. Have y'all heard who we got?
No, it hasn't been. I mean, you could look at bowl projections, but no. I think the final decisions have not been made yet.
I bet you it'll be the Chick-fil-A Bowl or something like that.
Yeah, that'll be disappointing, though. You don't like Chick-fil-A.
I know, but, you know, the facts are. But Carolina, I mean, they got enough to win the bowl, to be bowl eligible, but, man, to lose against Clemson the way they did,
If South Carolina,
I see what they're saying about Shane Beamer today.
They're saying he's going to take the Oklahoma job. That's what they're saying. If South Carolina wins the Chick-fil-A Bowl, will you go make an exception and get some Chick-fil-A after? No. You'll go get some Popeyes instead, even if they don't play in the Popeyes Bowl. Brad Crawford's going to join us in about 20 minutes at the top of next hour, but he does a really good job of trying to predict the bowl matchups. Right now he has South Carolina in the Birmingham Bowl against UAB. So that's where he has the Gamecocks going currently. And in regards to Clemson, I saw the Cheez-It Bowl. Let me see what Brad has here if I pull this up quickly. I saw somebody say the Cheez-It Bowl, which I believe is in Orlando against Kansas State. That was a prediction I saw. Look, I love Cheez-Its. Anybody that knows me knows. The number one snack are the big Cheez-Its. I don't know what it is, but when they get bigger, they get better. Right? The big Cheez-Its are better than the regular Cheez-Its, and you cannot have a better snack than big Cheez-Its. And especially you get some Swiss cheese and some pepperoni, and you make a little big Cheez-It mini sandwich. That's the way to go. So if they go to the Cheez-It Bowl, I'm all for it. Bring me back some of the big Cheez-Its, please. According to Brad, he has them in the Gator Bowl against Texas A&M. So we'll see what happens there. By the way, we actually do have more bowl-eligible teams than spots this year. So one team's going to be left at home, and we won't have any teams with losing records in the bowl game. So that'll be good. Because really, I don't like to 5-7 teams. It's nice for the players. They get to go to a bowl. They get to go to some tropical place or, you know, some warm town, and people fawn all over them. But, you know, 5-7, you go to a bowl game. I think that's silly. So at least this year we'll have teams that have 500 records or better. Like, that's much better. Right now, 6-6, you get to go to a bowl. Coming up, we'll get to the coaching carousel news and Lincoln Riley making the move to USC. And we'll get to that next. The Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the coaching carousel turns in college football. I'll give you my thoughts here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. You know, earlier somebody asked on the text line, you can always text the show, 843-608-1734, about Spencer Rattler, where he should transfer to, the Oklahoma quarterback who has entered the transfer portal here in the last about 40 minutes. I did mention Clemson, but you know what? South Carolina makes a better case, and they're in the same boat as Clemson. I said the same thing about Miles Brennan, the LSU quarterback, when he entered the portal, that both programs could benefit from him. I think both programs could use a veteran quarterback. I don't know if either team has the quarterback of the future on the roster. I mean, South Carolina, I don't think so. Clemson, maybe DJ will be better next year. But then Spencer Rattler, you have the Shane Beamer connection as well from Beamer's time at Oklahoma. So that could be a natural fit. South Carolina could certainly use him. It'd be quite the upgrade for them at the quarterback position. So that would be interesting. It's the SEC. That'd be something to keep an eye on. And when we catch up with Brad Crawford in about 12 minutes, I'll float that idea by him. I don't know. I mean, he may have some bigger takers. But you have that Beamer connection, a chance to come in and play right away. It's in the SEC. There could be some appeal to that opportunity for Rattler and South Carolina. Oklahoma, meanwhile, they lost their head coach. I'll get to that in just a moment with some of my thoughts of everything going on in the coaching carousel this weekend in college football. But you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Paul in Mount Pleasant is with us. Paul, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Luke, disappointed in the weekend. The Gamecocks looked horrible. Just disappointed. I heard you made a comment there about the Oklahoma coach. I would find it very hard to believe that that's a credible source, that Beamer is on the list. I mean, I wouldn't think he could get a job at, you know, Tennessee Chattanooga or someplace like that, Baptist College, Charleston Southern. But there ain't no way in the world that any top 100 college would even put him on a top 10 list. But I mean, South Carolina was the only school, in my opinion, that had an interest in him, just like nobody had an interest in Will Muschamp. Nobody in the world wanted Muschamp. I mean, Muschamp could have gotten a job at North Greenville College or something like that. No disrespect to them, but no other college wanted Muschamp, and nobody wants Beamer right now.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I appreciate the call. I said the same thing about Virginia Tech, right? The question came up, you know, does Beamer want to go to Virginia Tech? I think the better question is, would Virginia Tech be interested in him? Same idea here. Now, again, it's the connection. We do this all the time. Anytime a job comes open, right, we point to the obvious connections. That Beamer, because of the Virginia Tech connection. Now, Oklahoma, he came from Oklahoma. Is he going to be interested? Do they want to hire him? Beamer should be interested in Oklahoma, right? That's quite one of the, you know, that's one of those, one of the handful of gigs in college football that is that top tier. Type of gig. But, yeah, would Oklahoma ever be interested in him? Did he do enough this year to show you that he's ready after just one season as a head coach to take that big step up to an Oklahoma? Now, granted, they're going to come to the SEC, so eventually, maybe as soon as next year, we'll see, they'll both be SEC teams, and they won't be the top job in the SEC. Right? They'll be behind the eight ball a little bit more, South Carolina. But I was surprised to see Beamer's name mentioned. And, again, we'll discuss that with Brad next hour to see if there's any sort of validity to that. I think if you're an Oklahoma fan, if that's the way they go, I would be really disappointed. Right? And it's no disrespect to Shane Beamer. But you're telling me you're going to go from Bob Stoops to Lincoln Riley to Shane Beamer? I'm thinking, whoa, what's going on here? I think for Oklahoma, right? I mean, you're Oklahoma. You got to go get a big name. Go big name hunting. Maybe Bob Stoops will keep the job. Who knows? 843-721-9500. Let's go back to the phones. Ricardo is with us. Ricardo, what's going on? How are you? Ricardo! All right. We'll come back to Ricardo. It sounded like he was driving with his head out the window. Yesterday, you know, we get all this news in the coaching carousel. I was on the air for the Citadel game against South Carolina State. I get off the air. You know, I'm not keeping up with everything going on. I get onto my phone, and I do, you know, look at the up, and I think, whoa, what's going on? I missed everything. Lincoln Riley's going to USC. Bob Stoops is coming back to coach Oklahoma. Billy Napier's going to Florida. I thought, what the heck? What did I miss this afternoon? Now, you know, Lincoln Riley said the day before, I'm not going to be the coach at LSU. Yeah, because he was going to be the coach at USC. And so that's another one of those moments, much like Nick Saban saying, I will not be the coach of Alabama. Then a week later, he was introduced as head coach of Alabama. All right, that's one of those, you used to do that trick as a kid. Oh, I told you I'm not going to be the coach at LSU. You didn't ask me about USC. But Lincoln Riley leaves to go to USC. Now, he turned down the chance to go to the SEC with LSU. He turned down the chance to go to the SEC with Oklahoma. He decided to go out west to Southern Cal in the Pac-12. Now, there are certain coaches who are SEC guys, like Shane Beamer, aforementioned, seems to be one of those guys. I mean, this was the dream job. I think he wanted to be in the SEC with South Carolina. But others don't care as much as maybe the fans do. They don't look at the SEC as, you know, the mecca, because it's tougher to win there, and they'll fire you quicker there. Also, can use the number one job. I think it's better than LSU. I did a ranking last week on the show that said if you had your pick, which one would you pick? I put USC number one, and Riley agreed with me. Lincoln Riley could have went anywhere. He chose USC. I think it is the number one job. Now, Lincoln Riley coached the best program in the Big 12. Now he's going to go coach the best program in the Pac-12. And this is part of the concern for Oklahoma joining the SEC. They just went from, or they're going to, it hasn't happened yet, but they're going from the easiest path to the playoff to now the hardest path. So Lincoln Riley said, okay, instead of going from the hardest path, Oklahoma and the SEC, I'm going to now go to the new easiest path. It's no longer Oklahoma and the Big 12. USC and the Pac-12 with Lincoln Riley, that's now the easiest path to the playoff. What are final stop jobs? The place you wouldn't want to leave. I would have said Oklahoma, but apparently not anymore. I think in college football, the jobs that you wouldn't want to leave, Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, USC, Georgia, LSU, Florida, I think Notre Dame still is. Brian Kelly has hung around there. Clemson is right now. Dabo could stay there for his whole career. I don't know if Oklahoma is anymore, and for the same reason, I don't know if Texas is anymore once they join the SEC. I got more thoughts on this because you have Bob Stoops coming back to coach the bowl game for Oklahoma. We have rumors about Brent Venables or Shane Beamer potentially being the next head coach at Oklahoma. I'll tell you who Oklahoma should call today. And also some thoughts about Billy Napier taking a job at Florida. See how that goes. It was crazy. I got off the air yesterday, went on the old Twitter machine, and thought, what is going on in college football? As the carousel continues to turn. We'll catch up with Brad Crawford coming up at the top of next hour to talk about all this stuff and Clemson's win Saturday. Hour 3 coming up. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.